broken heart, the curse of broken heart, rise up from out the ground, that curse of broken heart. Listen here, people. My sin is washed away. My sin is washed away. No longer must I stray. My sin is washed away. Ooh, yeah. Hey, 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 hey. Ooh, yeah. Good Lord. All right, now. Now I'm born again. Now I am born again. New creature from within. And now I'm born again. I'm covered by blood. I'm covered by blood. No fear in that old flood. I'm covered by blood. Good Lord Jesus. My king will soon return. My king will soon return. Till then my soul must shine. My king will soon return. I'm covered by blood. I'm covered by blood. No fear in that old flood. I'm covered by blood. Good Lord. That curse of old time. That curse of broken heart. That curse of broken heart. Rise up from out the ground. That curse of broken heart. My sin is washed away. My sin is washed away. No longer must I stray. My sin is washed away. Now I'm born again. Now I'm born again. New creature from within. Now I'm born again. I'm covered by blood. I'm covered by blood. No fear in that old flood. I'm covered by blood. You know my king will soon return. My king will soon return. To them my soul must turn. My king will soon return. Yeah, yeah. Take a break now. Ooh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, hallelujah, Lord. Listen. That curse of broken heart. That curse of broken heart. Rise up from out the ground. That curse of broken heart. My sin is washed away. My sin is washed away. No longer must I stray. My sin is washed away. My king will soon return. My king will soon return. To let my soul must turn. My king will soon return. Hey, 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 hey. Ooh, yeah. My king will soon return. 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 Turn along, along. My king will soon return. One more time, boys. My king will soon return.
Live in our studio here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was singer, songwriter, guitarist Sean Michel, who is going to be among the headliners, I guess is the appropriate term, at the new Audio Feed Music Festival, which is going to have its inaugural run this weekend at the Champaign County Fairgrounds in Urbana, with lots and lots of shows, lots of performers on Friday and Saturday. And he is... here both representing the festival and also representing his band, essentially, because as it says somewhere that I read, Sean Michel is a guy and Sean Michel is a band.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
And we also have with us Jay Newman, who is kind of your manager, I guess, and also one of the board members of this music festival. To maybe give us a little bit of an overview of what it is. And I think I'm going to turn to you first, Jay, if you don't mind. I introduced the concept on yesterday's show because I talked with Dennison Whitmer and had a really nice chat with him and heard there was a phone conversation. So we heard some of his latest CD, a few songs off of there. We didn't really talk about the festival. We just talked about him, other than to say he was going to be performing at midnight on Friday. And I remember his, I think his off off-mic comment to me was, I hope they knew what they were doing because my songs are kind of quiet.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's probably going to put us all asleep.
Yeah. But in any event, so Audio Feed Music Festival, not exactly an offshoot of the Cornerstone Festival, but kind of, sort of?
Yeah, it's real tough how to define the relationship there. There's no official connection.
In which case, you actually have to tell many people, because I didn't know
right. Until
I did some digging around what the Cornerstone Music Festival was.
Yeah, Cornerstone Festival is a festival the Jesus People USA, which are based out of Chicago, had done for, I think, about 30 years. And last year was their final festival. Just a lot of things just didn't make sense for them to run anymore. But, you know, in their heyday, they were getting tens of thousands of festival goers to this cornfield out in West Illinois. So, and it was a big part of a lot of people's lives. They, you know, same people would go every year and just meet up with one another. And it became to where it wasn't even about which bands are playing. You know, it was just about, this is where we go at this time of year. We're a part of each other's lives. And then all of a sudden, the thing ended. And a lot of people were just kind of like, well, what are we going to do now? And Sean and I actually ran a stage at the final festival. And, I mean, a lot of people were coming up to us and just, you guys going to do something? What's next? What's going to happen? And it's like, well, we don't know, you know. And so just a lot of people wanted something, you know. And so we're definitely wanting that same crowd, that same group of people to gather, because it was, the more we do this, we realize it was not about a particular festival or another. It's just about getting together and hearing the bands that we like and fellowshipping and being a part of each other's lives. And people come up from all over the country for this thing every year, you know. So we're kind of loosely connected in the sense that we're definitely trying to appeal to those people and say, hey, this is a new thing that hopefully can also do what Cornerstone Festival did, as far as just the sense of family and the sense of togetherness, but also just providing a festival that's unlike any other. You know, bands that aren't going to headline, you know, like Coachella or Bonnaroo or something like that, or even some of the major Christian festivals like Creation or stuff. You know, if you look at the lineup, they don't look a lot like any of those festivals, you know, but they all have good followings, loyal fan bases, and, you know, it's in some ways kind of an alternative kind of lineup. So anyway, if you don't know about Cornerstone Festival, it's kind of tough to explain it all just in a short time, but that spirit of it, I think, we want to be alive in Audio Feed, but we also don't want people to expect it to be the sequel to Cornerstone, because that would not be fair. It's its own thing. It's a new thing, and we're hoping it lasts for many, many years. But this is year one, so we'll see.
And that one went on for 30 years, something,
I think,
like
around
that,
there. Yeah, I don't know the exact one, but yeah, I think three decades or so. Yeah.
And how much of it, were you so you had a stage there, and in fact, one of the stages at the Audio Feed Festival is called Sean Michel's Arkansas Stage, yeah. Which reminds me that I failed to mention that that's where you're from.
Yeah, Arkansas, Little Rock area.
Yeah, I realized a long time ago that I'm in the habit of not actually introducing my guests in any elaborate way. You know, we don't do the big biography here. We should let that sort of unfold as the show goes along. But yeah, so you're still based in Little Rock?
Yeah, we're still based down there in Arkansas. So,
and Jay, you're there as well.
Yeah.
How long were you involved in that Cornerstone Festival yourselves?
Well, the first festival I went to, it was 97. I was a senior in high school that year. And
at that point, you were involved as
a fan, a festival
member.
Goer. Yeah, that's right.
Festival goer.
So several years later, Sean and I also went just as fans. But we had started to do the music thing. He had begun to play, and I was managing him. And so we just kind of, you know, start networking. And I don't know, one thing kind of snowballed to another to where Sean was playing on one of the bigger stages, and then we're running a stage, trying to give an opportunity to other bands, you know, to get heard. Our timing was bad, I think, because we caught the tail end of it there, you know?
Right. Well, the type of music that is there is, I have to say that not being, having, being primarily a classical music person, who's also discovering lots of other things during the course of this particular radio program, which covers so many sorts of different music. I'm looking over the list of quite a long list of performers, and I have to confess that I don't recognize any of them, which probably tells you a couple of things, that I'm out of the loop for a lot of the genres that you're covering, but I'm certainly out of the Christian rock scene, if that's primarily what is going on at this festival. I noticed on the website it didn't actually say that anywhere, nor in the press release.
Yeah, we're it's tough because that's definitely a part of it, but we don't want to be so narrow with it as well, you know. Definitely we as board members we came together feeling like this is something that the Lord's involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all people of faith, and you know, this has been a matter of prayer for us, and so certainly that's at the heart of it. And so I don't want to dismiss that aspect, but at the same time, there's just a stigma with what goes with Christian music. None of us, I don't think, would shy away from saying we're Christians, but there's a different thing when you say Christian music, and people expect a certain thing. You know, I mean, because you have Christian radio, Christian music industry, you know, Christian radio. Whatever it is that we're doing and appealing to is not the same as that stuff.
Well, for example, the song Sean just sang is a Jesus song, essentially. I mean, it took me a while to figure it out, just because of the idiom and the way the music sounds, the way the manner in which you sing. Whereas yesterday, you know, talking with Dennison, and the songs that we played or that I heard didn't appear to be particularly Christian, but he presumably is, or was, or considers himself one way or another. So I guess that's two sort of representatives of some of the music that's going to be going on there, where maybe a Christian person singing songs that may ultimately have that inspiration, but versus a Christian person who's also singing a clearly Christian song. Although masked is the wrong word, but possibly masked in the Delta Blues idiom.
Well, I mean, where we're coming from is, as far as me personally, you know, for the genre or whatever you want to call it that we're playing, you know, a lot of the inspiration for the music that I've been given and that I play is from the Delta. Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana region, and all of that was steeped in and based in gospel music originally, starting off with slaves, with the spirituals that they had sung, and then that kind of progressed into instrumentation, and which it was normally just an acoustic guitar, you know, on a plantation somewhere, but essentially, you know, it was rooted, embedded in that culture in the Delta. The struggles they lived with, the struggles they had to deal with, and gospel music, and those two formed together, and they're one and the same, I feel like, and essentially, it kind of offshoot into the blues, and then eventually into rock and roll, and bada bing, bada boom, what we have now. So, you know, for me, it's just more writing our experiences and what is in our hearts to write, you know, and if it says Jesus 100 times in it, well then, okay, I guess. But it doesn't have to be that, you know. It doesn't have to. And so I think with this festival, it's more about what Jay was saying, that is at the seat of it, you know. But it's also about good art, and we want that to be expressed there at this festival, you know. And I feel like a lot of times when it has the Christian tag on it, a lot of times it seems like that means, oh, so the art's not as good, you know. And we're hoping that is clearly dismissed.
Yeah, if there's one thing that we want to be clear about, and the only reason there's apprehension with the term Christian with this festival is because Sean said it, so I'll just reiterate that there's generally a stigma that we would probably agree with, that Christian art is of an inferior quality, certainly in music.
So you're saying you would agree with that?
Totally. We tend to agree with that. I mean, we, you know, listen to Christian radio. We don't think that's the best that Christians have to offer musically. It's just a lot of times it's derivative, it's copycat, it's what sells, and what sells is seldom the best art.
In regular radio. I mean, radio that's not quote-unquote Christian. I mean, there's so many people who complain all the time about pop radio and this sucks and this doesn't sound good, you know, and this isn't real music. And it's because it's a business, you know, it's the factory, you know, send it on through the line and package it in this certain way just to make money. And using art to make money always cheapens art. I feel like it kills art. And if making money is the main motivation, then the art is going to suffer ultimately, I feel like. And it's like that, unfortunately, in the quote-unquote Christian market, whatever that means, you know. So I guess that's essentially what we're saying.
Yeah, all that aside, I mean, God bless the people who are a part of that and, you know, festivals that cater to that audience. That's just not what Audio Feed is, though. We are catering to a different audience who maybe doesn't like that, you know. People who would agree with, okay, maybe I believe, you know, maybe I don't, doesn't matter. But whatever that is commercial, and I don't like that. So the bands, there's a reason, even if you were up on it, most of the bands you probably wouldn't recognize because they're what would be considered underground bands, you know. They're not famous for the most part. I mean, they have followings. They have good fan bases. Obviously, that matters. We're not trying to lose money on this thing either, you know. But, you know, they're not going to get on the radio. They're not going to be on major arena tours or anything like that, you know.
Where did you come up with the name Audio Feed, and then how do you find the bands?
Audio Feed was, well, truth be told, it was just the coolest sounding name of a list of really bad sounding names. We just brainstormed. We're like, well, that one sounds good. But the more I thought about it, the logo we have is a microphone grown out of a corn husk, at which I like the imagery there.
Now I see what that's supposed to be.
We'll work on that.
Yeah. In black and white, it's a little
hard
to decipher. It's
so anyway.
And it was probably a scan of a fax. And
you're right, right. So, but anyway, it's filling a hunger that we have for music of a certain kind, you know. So I like that. I like the audio feed aspect of it. Obviously, we're here in the heartland where, you know, fields of corn forever. You know, some of that kind of goes together with that too. So, that's behind the name. What was the second thing you asked?
Where you find the band? You know, if they're, I mean, being obscure to me is sort of meaningless, but having them be obscure to at least some of the people you might want to attract might suggest that finding these bands is difficult, or that you went through an arduous process to find them, or that you're all on the underground, so they were easy to find
right
for you, but wouldn't have been for somebody else.
Well, that's, yeah. First and foremost, I guess, important is that we're fans. We're doing this because we love it. We love the music, and we love the bands. The majority of the bands, we're fans of ourselves. And
us means is a board of what?
There's three of us.
Three?
Yeah. And then we have other volunteers who have a lot of input who are also, you know, saying, well, there's this band I really like and whatever. So there's three on the board, and then kind of a network of maybe another dozen who are really involved in the efforts. So that would be the first thing. There's bands we want to see. The second thing is obviously we want bands who are going to bring people, you know, too. So that's a criteria for us. It's just kind of like if we brought every band we wanted, we just, you know, we wouldn't have time to have them all. So, you know, we whittle them down.
Or money.
And so the other thing is just, you know, does it fit in their touring schedule and everything? So, but as far as finding them, you know, this year for sure, there's not a band on the lineup that one of us hasn't heard play live before and just wanted to be a part of this fest. So,
I didn't count it up, but how many bands have you got?
Last count, it was 60, I think. 60 plus. We say 60 plus, so I think we're over 60 now.
And they're mostly playing for anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour.
Half-hour sets to over an hour set, yeah.
And Sean's going to be on, if I'm reading this right, Friday at 9:10 p.m. and then Saturday at 10:10 p.m. Do you actually keep on schedule that precisely?
Well, we're trying to. You know, we're trying to. So a lot of volunteers make that work, and a lot of people believe in what we're doing. So we'll see. You know, year one, we'll see how good the system works.
Well, let me remind listeners that first, this is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local performances, and the performances we're talking about on today's show are on the Audio Feed Music Festival. It's the first such festival. It's happening this Friday and Saturday in Urbana and on the Champaign County Fairgrounds. And Jay Newman is with us. He's one of the board members. He's also a manager for Sean Michel, both person and band, I guess. And Sean Michel, the person, is here as a one-man band at the moment. He'll be playing both of those sets with his trio mates. And before we talk a little bit more about your music and how you got started into it and so on, Sean, why don't you do us another song?
Yeah, I'm going to play a song. This song off our second-to-last record, Back to Del. This is called Death Knocking.
I hear death knocking at my door. I can hear death knocking at my door. I hear death knocking, and he will not go away. Soon you won't sit around here no more. I hear a calling out my name, love. I can hear a calling out my name. Telling me that I'm the one to blame. I can feel hope lifting up my face. I can feel hope lifting up my face. I feel hope lifting, and she's whispering in my ear. She's telling me the Lord done took my place. Walking right on in, yes sir. I can see love walking right on in. I see love walking, and she's filling me up inside. Soon you might see me here again. Soon you'll see me here again. Soon you'll see. Take me down, soon you'll see me here. You see me here again.
Death is Knockin', the name of the song, right?
Death Knockin', yes.
From Back to the Delta, the next to last album, Sean Michel and the band. The current one is called Electric Delta. There's a story behind the connection there, which we'll talk about in just a moment. Sean is Sean Michel live here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. If you made a gift to Illinois Public Media over the last 12 months, you helped us make a real difference in our community. You've made it possible for listeners throughout Central Illinois to not only enjoy countless hours of great live local music coverage, such as on Live and Local, but also the other incredible services that this station provides as well. I'm very happy to share on behalf of all of our development people that on June 30th, Illinois Public Media did exceed its fundraising goal. We were pushing hard to do that. $2.1 million was the goal. We got there, and apparently at least a little bit beyond. That is for fiscal year 2013. The money we raised in that year supports all the programs starting yesterday for 2014. So on behalf of all the community members whose lives we believe are enriched by this music and this station, we certainly thank you for your support, and may it continue for a long, long, long time to come. Sean, how did you get your start as a musician and or guitarist, whichever came first?
Well, I guess since I was a little kid, I'd been singing. My mom would drag me to church as a little kid, even when I didn't want to go. And so I'd always been around music, being inside of a church. And that was a big influence on me, I feel like. And even as a kid, I'd always been influenced by black American music, usually R&B, soul. And then, you know, I sang a few times in church, but I was a ham, but I was also pretty shy at the same time. And eventually, as I got older in high school and got a lot more involved within the church itself, I started singing more inside the church. And I ended up forming a band with some friends of mine who had started playing guitar around the same time in high school, which influenced me to start playing guitar. So I got a kind of a late start. I didn't really start playing guitar until I was like 16 or 17. And that's kind of how it all began. And it's just been a gradual growing and transformation process, you know, since I've been about 17, playing more seriously as far as like playing gigs and in front of audiences. So
the type of guitar you picked up, I assume, was electric to start?
I picked up an acoustic guitar. My dad bought me my first guitar, you know, my junior, senior year of high school. And it was an acoustic, and I played acoustic for about 7 years. I would never touch an electric. For some reason, I didn't like electric, I felt like. And I was kind of snobbish about it.
And it was what kind of music at that point? I mean,
at that point, it was more just like, I don't really know how to explain it, but kind of like soulful indie rock, I guess, just on an acoustic, you know. real basic, simple four chords, you know, like every singer-songwriter kind of stuff. And I was doing mainly that for a really long time because I didn't really know how to do anything else. And then slowly after college, with Jay's help and some other people, you know, a band started forming and with some of these songs I'd been writing. And then I ended up having to learn how to work within a band because it's a lot different playing solo and being used to you being the only one playing and singing to having members helping you make the music sound better. And you have to learn how to work within that element and work with other people and swallow your pride and make it less about yourself and more about the group as opposed to who you are singularly, you know. And so anyway, that was a whole learning experience there. And at that point in time, about 2003, 2004, we started touring and playing shows, and it was more of this indie kind of rock and roll feel. But every time we toured, I felt like, and every time we played, whether it was in a bar or a church or anything like that or at a festival, I felt like something was kind of missing, like, and I didn't really know what it was, but I felt like it wasn't completely me as far as musically. And I had to have some events happen in my life to kind of get me on the right track of where I feel like our sound is today. But I had to go through a lot of mess to get there. But sometimes you have to go through those things in life to finally get to the place where you really need to be. So,
You want to talk about the mess at all?
Yeah, we can. I've been touring with these guys for like 4 years, and there was a lot involved with that. I mean, whenever you're in a band, I mean, it's a relationship, you know. And people always talk about band drama, but that stuff's real life. You know, you're sharing life with each other. You're sharing music and art and your experiences. And so you grow really close together. And anyway, I had these guys I was on tour with for 4 years, and we made this album together. Well, I happened to be on a brief stint on this little bitty TV show, and we ended up getting a lot of shows from that and making more money from that for a little while.
American Idol.
Well, it's a little bitty now. It's on a decline. Yeah. But you know, I was on there for just a brief stint, and for some reason, you know, my audition seemed to draw a lot of attention. Probably because I had a beard and long hair, and that wasn't typical for that show at the time.
Was the audition the one where it was just you and your feet stomping on the
ground?
Yeah, exactly. No guitar,
because that was before you could use instruments on the show. And I ended up going to Hollywood Week and all this stuff. And anyway, they barely showed my clip, but I got a lot of press for it because of the way I looked and everything. And so anyway, we started playing a lot more shows, making more money, and we ended up making this album together from that. But it was like an album that we knew wasn't going to make any money. Problem is we like sunk a whole lot of money into it. And we got ourselves in a pretty good little debt, you know, mess of debt. And as soon as we recorded, it seemed like as soon as we were done recording the album, and like 3 months later, this whole band of mine quit on me. And I was by myself again.
With the debt.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, but I thought I was about to lose my job. And I lost a lot of other things, man. And I went into a real deep depression. I was knocking on doors in the freezing cold rain in January trying to sell these records, you know. And it was pretty pitiful, you know, at the time it was.
Sounds pitiful.
Yeah. And so around that same time, Jay had the idea of, hey, let's work on an album where we take some old hymns that we've grown up singing since we were kids and turn them into like blues style. And we all thought at the time, like, hey, that sounds like a good idea, you know. And we love going to blues festivals. There's huge blues festivals in Arkansas, the King Biscuit Blues Festival, one of the largest in the country. And we always went to that, and I always enjoyed it, but I didn't know how to play the blues. You know, I could probably sing it because I love singing Black American kind of music. And he was like, well, we're going to work on that album? And I was like, no, man. I mean, I'm not feeling anything but just sitting in my room, like, you know, depressed all the time. And he's like, all right, well, I guess we're not going to do it. And around that same time, this 18-year-old kid shows up in my life at the church I was at and helping at. And that's all he did was eat, sleep, and drink the blues, man. And he played guitar awesome and all this stuff. Well, he started handing me all this old blues music from like the 30s and 40s. And I was just listening to it, man, in that depressed state, you know. And, you know, they say, you know, you gotta have the blues before you can really play the blues, you know. And I guess that's where I needed to be. And the more I started listening, the more it started coming out in my fingers and in my thoughts and in the way I processed how to write a song. And eventually over time, man, it just slowly came together. I picked up a slide one day, and that was a whole nother thing too. And then these certain people started coming in my life that wanted to play the same thing. And about 4 years later, you know, here we are finally. We're still fine-tuning our sound, but we've gotten a lot closer to where it is with Back to the Delta and Electric Delta. Mainly Electric Delta, but Back to the Delta was a process in itself, too. We desperately needed to make that album. and there's a
Which
lot of
one?
Reasons why.
Electric Delta?
Back to the Delta. The case there was we were playing this, like, bluesy rock and roll stuff, but we were scattered, man. I mean, we were all over the place. We didn't really have any direction as far as, like, what we were supposed to be, you know, as far as a band. And, again, Jay had the insight and the vision to say, well, we need to strip everything away. All this clutter, the electric guitars, the amps, the loud drums, all the distractions, let's strip away and let's get down to the core of what has always inspired us. And it was these 30s and 40s, like, gospel blues artists, you know, people like Blind Willie Johnson or Sister Rosetta Tharpe or Mississippi Fred McDowell, you know, Skip James, all these guys that I've been listening to. He was like, let's record an album like they recorded an album, and let's do it in the place they did it, you know. And that was the beginning of Back to the Delta. And again, I was like fighting them, kind of like, no, it's a stupid idea. But then the more I started thinking about it, I was like, yeah, you're right, again, you know. And I had a steel resonator. It was a full metal guitar that I played slide on. And I just started writing these old, like, gospel blues songs. And they just started coming together, man, and quickly coming together. And then we found a 100-year-old church in Rolling Fork, Mississippi, which is where Muddy Waters was born. And they were kind enough to let us, I mean, the whole sanctuary was stripped of its pews. It was just old wooden floors and these high ceilings. And we went there and visited, and we were like, this is the perfect place to record it. And we found an engineer in Nashville who works strictly in analog tape recording, and he could bring his tape machines to remote locations and record. And so all these pieces started falling together, and it magically kind of just worked. Man, it was pretty amazing, so...
The I saw that you I was actually trying to find this album, and I didn't find it as a download, and I don't know if that's because you released it on vinyl and cassette only.
Yeah, yeah.
The vinyl I get, because that's been getting more common. We talked about that with Dennison yesterday, Dennison Whitmer on the program. But why cassette?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Jay has to explain that.
Yeah. part of this project was... not only did we want to make a record the way they used to be made, I mean, man, we did it. I mean, vintage mics, you know, straight to tape. The way the process was the same, the equipment was the same, the location was the same. And if we're gonna go to such pains to recreate the process, we didn't want it to break down with the listener. You know, we want it to be listened to a certain way, the way, you know, really all of us grew up listening to music in the first place. We didn't download singles off the internet, you know. We popped in something and listened to an album, you know, and this was an entire album. So we wanted the medium that we released it on to force the listener to listen to the album, you know, and not just skip next song, skip next song, skip next song. So we didn't put it on CD. We didn't make it available on iTunes or any of that. We did kind of cave where, you know, if you get the tape or the vinyl, there's a digital download. But one of the things is we had some control over that. So the quality is the highest quality MP3 you can have. It's still MP3, so it's compressed. But it's whatever 350, I don't know what bit rate or whatever it is. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Anyway, it's a little over my head. But at the time, I knew because I put all that stuff together. But, you know, it's high quality, and we didn't want it to be so compressed. We go to all these pains to recreate a sound and a style, and then you compress it down so it'll fit on iTunes, you miss 70% of what we did. You know, you're not going to hear it, you know, because it's just been compressed. So, yeah, we're kind of snobbish about it. You can't just go find it on the internet. You pretty much have to buy a copy from us. But that's because we just wanted to stay true to it. And a lot of it was, for us, a learning process. This was not about, let's make a record for fans to enjoy. I mean, we wanted people to be a part of the process with us, but it was not, we're going to give you something to consume. You know, this was educational as much as it was anything. Yeah, we feel like we just lost something in modern music, and we wanted to go back to where the whole thing started, you know, the region, the style, everything, and just say, okay, if we can start from here, maybe... the next 2, 3, 4 albums we do, maybe we'll get back on the right track, you know. Wherever it veered off, maybe we can go back to the beginning. That's why it's called Back to the Delta. If we can go back to the beginning, maybe we can figure out where they went wrong and not make that mistake again, and just, you know, stay true to making quality music, quality art, and not just, you know, something for consumption.
And, yeah. And I'm not sure if you've ever been to the Delta region before. But
I have not.
I mean, it is... a lot of people think it's a hellhole, you know. Personally, I mean, it's hot.
Hey man, I grew up here.
I love the Delta, but it is hot as hell, man. And it's a hard place to live. But the craziest thing about it is that when you're down there, everything, distractions are gone. I mean, there's hardly any internet, if there is any. The land is completely flat, fertile land for growth, hardly any trees. So you can see for miles, man. And it's a physical representation of what was going on with us musically, spiritually, like everything at one time, where all these distractions were taken away and we could see again, you know, the vision of where we needed to go. And it was being simplified. It was difficult, but also being simplified. It's simplified in the sense of we're taking all these electrical instruments away, but difficult in the fact that we're laying it down to tape. You know, the producer or the engineer's name is Chris Mara. He has a two-story analog complete warehouse studio in Nashville, Tennessee. And he comes down there, man, and he mixes live to tape. I mean, that's how he did it back in the day. I mean, he was mixing the levels, and he had to know the songs almost as well as we did. And if we didn't like the take, we had to do the song all over again. You know, we didn't punch in or anything fancy like that. And but doing that and boiling it all down to the roots and the essentials, man, it gave us clear vision again. And we ended up touring on that album for about 8 months as a three-piece electric band, which brought about its own difficulties in a sense that we could get to in a minute. But yeah,
we'll talk about where you went from there.
Yeah,
after another song that's more or less the sound that people would hear on that album, Back to the Delta. We're talking to Sean Michel of Little Rock, Arkansas, and also his manager, Jay Newman. Both are involved in the Audio Feed Music Festival, which is a brand new festival that's running Friday and Saturday this weekend at the Champaign County Fairgrounds in Urbana. And Jay's on the board for that. And there is a Sean Michel Arkansas stage where a lot of the artists are going to be performing. And we're talking a bit about the Back to the Delta LP or cassette that you can get. By the way, what is the website where you can, or how can somebody get it if they want?
You can get it on our online store, which is, we use Store Envy. So it's SeanMichel.StoreEnvy.com, or you can just go to our Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/SeanMichelMusic, and there's a store link. So we do mail order. That's really the only way you can get it.
Okay,
so.
And Sean is spelled S-E-A-N. Michelle is M-I-C-H-E-L.
That's right.
Because you could do both of those in any number of different ways. What do you want to do next?
I guess I'll do another song from Back to the Delta. It also made Electric Delta as well, but the song called He Is the One.
Stomp your feet, people, now. Clap your hands, people, now. Stomp your feet, people, now. You know the rulers and the boss of mine, but they're star. But he's the only one really in charge. He's the one for me. Come on now. Hey, he is the one. He's the firstborn son of a God you cannot see. Not down planted of me. He is the one who came up to be under the church body head. He's the firstborn from the dead. I said, oh, my God, put his foolish in here. On us, and we can do what I said. Both knees up in heaven and down on earth. He made it all and he know what his word made a peace with God by his own cost, by the blood that he spilled when I hung on the cross. He's the one for me. Come on. Hey, he's the one. He's the firstborn son of the God you cannot see. Got the plan today to be. He is the one. I came up to be undone. Church. Church body head, he the church body head, he the firstborn from the dead.
God Almighty.
Sean Michel, he is the one. Do you write all the songs?
Yeah, for the most part. Jay and I wrote them together for the most part.
And that's on the CD called Back to the Delta. And it's also on CD called Electric Delta, about which more in a moment. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our programs today are made possible with support from the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, presenting Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors and Macbeth, plus Failure, a Love Story by Philip Dawkins, from July 6th through August 10th at Ewing Manor in Bloomington. Ticket information is available at thefestival.org or 309-438-2535. So Back to the Delta was supposed to get you all back on track in some way or another, purify the roots, so to speak.
Yeah.
And you, Jay, you said earlier, sort of, well, one of you said, get rid of the trappings, get rid of the extra stuff. So you went back to your to the roots, and then you put the stuff back. What was different?
Well, I don't know if I can really explain that so much into words. There's something in the air down there, man, and there's definitely something in the water, because it was brown when we were drinking it down there. But we were down there for about 2 days, and the process of writing the songs took a couple months or so. And I feel like in that process, I learned to simplify things and not make things so difficult all the time. And you know, in the music, as far as now, what happened was we ended up touring for 8 months on these songs that we had written and recorded acoustically,
touring electric.
But we toured as a three-piece electric band, yeah, as a like a power trio. And what ended up happening was these songs began to morph and take on a new dynamic. They were still the same songs and still had the essential qualities of what we had done with them originally, but they were louder, they were more aggressive, they were in your face, they had electricity running through them now, you know, which is what happened in history naturally with the blues. You know, you had all these guys on these plantations working in these cotton fields 14-hour days, struggling and sweating and barely making it. And the music for them was a relief. It was a release in a way of all their struggles, their anger, you know, spiritually and physically with everything going on around them, their hardships. And it was a chance to get away. Well, eventually, with you know, the technology of recording music in the 40s and then 30s, 40s, and 50s, and then the invention of this little thing called the electric guitar, well, then you start giving these guys on the plantation guitars that can plug into amps. And rock and roll came to be born. You know, like Muddy Waters said, you know, blues had a baby and named it rock and roll. And it's the truth. That's what happened. And that's what started happening to us. So maybe that's what we needed to do for who we were personally and as a band. We needed to go back to the blues the way it was and get in touch with who we are really on the inside and birth that into rock and roll. You know what I'm saying? To where we're not just playing like we play rock and roll or acting like we play rock and roll. We really experienced it, and we went on the journey for ourselves. We went back in time almost. We took a time machine back and learned from what happened in history, and we brought it back with us. And so now when these songs that were written acoustically, like a lot of these guys did on the plantation, we plugged them into electric guitars, and it turned into rock and roll. And then it just kind of came clear to us, well, we need to do another album with some of these songs. And so we talked about it. Jay had thought this idea up of let's call it Electric Delta, and let's work with the same guy we worked with before, but let's go to his studio this time and let's plug everything up and let's do it live to tape. And we did that again. So we stayed in the same medium of analog and tape, and we wanted to stay true to that, and we wanted to stay true to it being as live as we possibly could, playing all together at the same time. And we practiced our butts off for that, man. I mean, because we had heard horror stories about people trying to record live to tape. we've grown up in this digital age where you record on Pro Tools or something like that, and you can just take it a track at a time, you know, and play to a little metronome in your ear. But this was like we had to be watching each other, and we had to know the song so well that it didn't suck on the album, you know. So we worked really hard at that, and that's what ended up happening. We took five songs from Back to the Delta, the five best ones that we thought were the best ones. We re-recorded them live, electric to tape, as a three-piece band, and then we wrote six new ones, and it kind of culminated into our new album. It's called Electric Delta.
And that one you can find on iTunes.
That's right.
Does the electric quality sort of change the concern a little bit about the compression or?
No, not
just,
at all.
Does it seem a little more mainstream?
It still sounds better on vinyl.
Yeah, it always does. I mean, anything sounds better than MP3. I don't care what anybody out there says.
That's
you can
right.
Listen to your little iPhone or iPod if you want, but I'm sorry, my record player sounds better than your iPhone.
Well, and the thing with the iPhone and all that stuff, I mean, that was made for convenience. And there's, you know, it's understandable because it's nice to have 10,000 songs at your, you know, fingertips. But on the other hand, if that's all you're listening to, you know, you're losing quality and you're settling for less. And we learned that when we made Back to the Delta. The guy we had master that was a guy that they called the Golden Ear. He had been working for Stax Records since the 60s and 70s, mastering all their records. And he's in Memphis, Tennessee. And he mastered our records. And we got to watch him actually cut the record on the ladle, you know, do the test pressings. And he was behind there working with the wires talking about, I hate this machine, you know, this is why I quit doing these, you know, and he just was like, complaining about it because it's always breaking down. And he told us a little history lesson, man, about the first time in like 82 or 83 or something like that, where a guy comes in the studio and is like, hey, man, have you heard of this thing called a compact disc? And he's like, no, I hadn't. He's like, well, it holds 80 minutes of information plus video. And he's like, well, hallelujah, because he was sick and tired of cutting these records on the ladle machine because it was a painstaking process. And then we asked him, we're like, yeah, but do you feel like the quality changed? And he was like, and then he poked his head up from behind the machine and had this like stern look on his face, and he said, oh yeah, we definitely traded quality for convenience. And I think that's what happens with the digital medium. It's not necessarily it's evil or anything, but we need to be careful with trading quality for convenience. And there's definitely a better quality in the vinyl and getting the highest quality sound waves you can to fit on that and not compressing it into an MP3 format. So.
We always encourage people at our merch table to buy a vinyl and CD if they have to, but preferably the vinyl so that, you know, there's a download card, you can put it on your iPod, you can do all that. But if you hear the vinyl, then you know how it's supposed to sound. And then when you hear it in your car, maybe your brain will fill in the gaps because you've heard the way it's supposed to sound. But if you've never heard the way it's supposed to sound, then you're just missing so much, you know. But, I use both. I don't know anybody that doesn't use both, you know, that uses vinyl who doesn't use digital. There's only vinyl, you know. But we encourage people who only use digital format to try the real format too as well. But it's about getting it out there. This one's not about our personal project. This one's a little bit more about we want folks to hear this.
Yeah, right. Buy it. This one we're like, please buy. You can find it anywhere you want to. You know, it's not that hard to find. You don't have to go through the woods to find it. So,
well, speaking of how it's supposed to sound, if you want to hear Sean Michel the band, which is say the trio, Sean Michel guitar and vocals, Seth Atchley's your bassist, Bradley Batterton drums. You can go hear him at the Audio Feed Music Festival this weekend. They're going to be playing just twice, right? Friday night at 9:10 or so, and then Saturday night also at 10:10. Looks like four stages, actually five stages, because you have kind of a fifth stage that people come up, can
kind of
sign
impromptu
up and do their own thing on.
Yeah.
You can get all the information, by the way, at audiofeedfestival.com, but Sean Michel and band will be there Friday and Saturday on Sean Michel's Arkansas stage, and we'll let him do one more song in just a moment. Let me mention a few other things going on in our listening area for the next couple of days. This is Tuesday, I think. Yep. So that means the traditional jazz orchestra will be at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana in about 5 minutes. They're starting up at 5 o'clock. There is a concert at the Thomas Rees Memorial Carillon in Springfield tonight at 7 o'clock. Those happen nightly through Thursday. The Blues Deacons will be at Prairie Park in Urbana tomorrow evening at 6:30. The Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana is presenting Evil Dead, the musical, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and that continues for a while. The John Campbell Trio are at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. It's Jammin' Jimmy Bean and Friends, an acoustic experience at Bentley's Pub in Champaign tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. The weekly Gunnysack Review is at the Yoder Center in Arthur tomorrow evening at 7. And the weekly traditional Irish music session is at Dublin O'Neill's in downtown Champaign tomorrow night at 8:30. And it's Gordy Wilson has his weekly piano gig at the Baltini Lounge in downtown Champaign tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. And looking ahead just a little bit, the Decatur Park Singers on the 4th of July will be in Nelson Park in Decatur Thursday at 7 o'clock. And finally, the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band at Allerton Park in Monticello Friday evening at 6 o'clock on their first Friday of the Month music series that they started up in April and will go through at least October. You're listening to Live and Local on 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with Translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. On tomorrow's show, I can only remember half of who's coming, and I know it's somebody from the festival, actually, Lauren Peacock. I fail to write these things down. You'd think I'd learn after 4.5 years. Lauren Peacock will be at the Audio Feed Festival. She'll be on the show tomorrow. I'll be off on Thursday for the fourth holiday, and then also on Friday from the Audio Feed Festival, Michael Rowe will be joining us, as well as students from the Illinois Summer Youth Music Program. Sorry, no, they're not coming in on Friday. Somebody else is coming in Friday. I'll let you know more tomorrow. But right now, got another song from Sean Michelle. What do you want to do?
This is a little more blatant. This is one from our Back to the Delta record. It's called My Jesus.
Who's the one who will come again? Who? roses raise on high. Who meet his children up in the sky? My cheer.